Tonight, I'm going to talk about the seven factors of awakening. I became interested in the seven factors of awakening. I never even heard of them before. But when I came upon the Anapanasati Sutta, which is the sutra on full awareness of breathing, that sutra focuses on, it's a meditation, really, and it focuses on the body, feelings, thoughts, and dharmas. And there was a reference made to the seven factors of awakening. And, you know, they named them and everything. And I thought, wow, this sounds something that would be really good, because, you know, I always get questions about how do I do this? How do I free myself? You know, and the seven factors of awakening really focus on that. So, So in the meantime, Tricycle offered a course in the seven factors of awakening. So I am taking the course right now. So I thought that I would turnkey it, you know, so that you could have the advantage of it. You know, it takes a lot longer if you're doing the course than, you know, to listen to seven or eight talks on it. But I thought it might be helpful for you and for me. Okay. So this is going to be the first of several talks that I'm going to do on this. So what are the seven factors of awakening? Okay. They're sometimes referred to as the treasures within. And they can be cultivated through meditation and mindfulness practices. And there's the seven: mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, contentment, concentration, and equanimity. These qualities we already have. We don't have to go out and look for them. We don't have to study them. We already have them. We just need to activate them. They are our allies, and they protect us from ourselves, in a matter of speaking. They incline the heart to awaken. As such, the seven factors of awakening balance out the five veiling factors, you know, veiling factors, or hindrances. They're often called hindrances in a lot of the communications. These five veiling factors distort our vision, ergo the veil, and make us forgetful. So we don't see things as they actually are. You know, we see them through our veils, through which is our perceptions and our opinions and our judgments. So what are the five? Sensual desire. When I say sensual desire, they mean the senses, including the mind. So any desire, I mean, that's one of the noble truths, right? It's a cause of suffering, is desire. Then there's ill will. Then comes the three Ds. The third one is dullness, drowsiness, and disassociation. Then the fourth one is restlessness and worry. And the last one is skeptical doubt. You could probably figure out which is the ones that you exist in most of the time. I mean, we go in and out of these all the time, you know. But if I had to pick one for myself, I would say restlessness and worry. Like, I'm dealing with that a lot. So within the five veiling factors exist what we consider to be the negative emotions, like anger and fear and hatred, in addition to attachment and aversion. These are all things that we talk about in Buddhism. Now they're kind of put into this one package of the five veiling factors and five hindrances to practice. The veiling factors cause distress and incline the heart away from awakening. So utilizing the seven factors of awakening can incline the heart to liberation. which is the goal of Buddhism. So here's an example of all seven. If we are mindful, number one, if we are mindful of our anger, for example, then we can, number two, investigate the cause, and number three, place our energy in releasing it. As a result, we may feel joy, number four, and contentment, number five, which enables us to concentrate, number six, and be balanced, number seven. See how that gives a little, it's not going to work perfectly like that all the time, but I just wanted to give you an idea of how they fit in with our practice. And there are several very important points to consider. The first is to be aware, to know when the veiling factors or the hindrances are present, when anger is present, when ill will is present, when desire or wanting is present. So how do we do that? We look to the body. Remember, this is a body practice. Everything is in the body. So we go to the body and we ask, what is the felt sense of them? How am I feeling this? Where is it in my body? You guys hear me say this a lot. Then we ask, what does this factor or hindrance need? I love this. What does this need? So for example, if you're like me, restlessness and worry, that calls for calmness. It's calling for calmness. It needs calmness. If there is dullness and disassociation, well, that might call for either energy or investigation. What is this disassociation? Why am I not feeling part of this? Or dullness, sleepiness, like when you're at a session or something. Okay, I need to get more energy. How can I get more energy? So it's calling for something. It's calling for something from you. So this brings us to the next very important point, which is to see these veiling factors as callings. I bet you never heard that word used this way before. This is a Michelle thing. This is not the people who gave giving the talks. This is how I see it, though. They're a calling. They're calling for something they need. They're calling for something you need. So to heed the call, to pay attention to them, is wisdom. Anger, fear, jealousy. To pay attention is wisdom. To see the hindrances as opportunities to serve us in our quest for liberation, rather than denying or running away from them, which is what we do a lot. When we run away from them, we don't get to know them. So what happens then? They just sit there in our subconscious and sabotage our conscious life. No, they're hidden. So we respond to the world and to ourselves from we don't know what, because they're hidden. This is not wisdom. It's following a well-worn pattern, which is comfortable, but not compassionate. Instead, we can get to know them using the seven factors of awakening as tools to crack ourselves open. So we use them as tools. Now, the Gata of Atonement at the end tells us, take heed, right? Take heed, do not squander your life. It's not just the advice of the Jikido who's saying, hey, don't squander your life. The Jikido is the bell ringer who chants this. You can look at it that way, sure. But you could also look at it as we need to heed ourselves. Take heed. We are the universe. You are the universe, and the universe is calling you to come back home when you have anger, when you have fear, when you have jealousy, when things aren't going your way, when you're just upset. It's the universe calling you to wake up, to come back home. So this way, these five Hindutans are not the bad guys. They're not the bad guys. And we chanted the Bodhisattva vow for a reason today. All right, so I want you to open to that page, page 10. If you're at home, you could do that too. We're going to look at the third paragraph of that. I haven't done this now, so it might not turn out the way I wanted to, so we'll see what happens. It's an experiment. So we're going to look at the third paragraph, and you see where it says someone, a person. We're going to say I. We're going to say I. Even though I may be a fool, be warm and compassionate to myself. Even though I may be a fool, I should be warm and compassionate to myself. If by any chance I should turn against myself, become a sworn enemy, abuse and persecute myself, I should sincerely bow down with humble language in reverent belief that I, or this anger, this fear, this jealousy, this hatred, is the merciful avatar of Buddha, who uses devices to emancipate us from sinful karma that has been produced and accumulated upon ourselves by our own egoistic delusion and attachment through countless cycles of karmas. We are doing this to ourselves. When we read this, we're always thinking of somebody else that's attacking us. We never think about it in terms of ourselves. This is what we do to ourselves. So when you look at the hindrances, desire, ill will, drowsiness and dullness and boredom and restlessness and worry and skeptical doubt, those are the devices Buddha is using to say, come on home, man, use this. This is a tool. Okay, so how do you open up? How do you open up and use anger, jealousy, and hatred? You go to the seven factors of awakening and you rely on them so that you can balance this whole thing out, so that you can see more clearly, because the hindrances, as they're called, they're the veiling factors. They hide, they don't see clearly, they veil our vision. So we need the seven factors of awakening, mindfulness and investigation and energy and joy and concentration. We need all of those things to help us see more clearly. Am I speaking clearly? Yeah. And it's also important to know when the factors of awakening are present, so that we can appreciate and strengthen them and not ignore them or take them for granted. You know, we have a tendency toward negativity bias. We're always thinking what's wrong. So we have to balance it out by paying attention to what's right. Okay, so we have to be mindful. We have to realize, oh, I'm being really mindful right now. I mean, of course, when you say that, you're taking yourself out of mindfulness. But you can at least recognize it, even if you recognize it after the fact. Or, oh, I'm really energetic today. Or, I'm joyful today. You know, I'm really concentrating on my work today. I'm kind of happy. I'm content. You know, or even just in this moment, I'm content in this moment. You know, or, oh, I feel balanced, even though that person said something to me, oh, I was able to not let it affect me. And then notice those things. Notice the times when you are successful. that your practice is working for you, even if it's only a little itty bitty thing. Even if it's only a little itty bitty thing. You can't live, let's say you live, here's 100%, right? And you can't live your life 75% thinking that everything is negative. You're negative. So many things are wrong with the world. So many things are wrong with you, and get to enlightenment. That ain't happening. You have to let the light in, the joy, the contentment. Mindfulness helps you make better decisions. Investigation helps you to understand yourself. Once you understand yourself, you make better decisions, right? You have more energy for life. You start wanting to do stuff in your practice instead of saying, oh, I really should be more mindful right now because I'm cutting these vegetables. I really don't want to cut them, you know? When you start to get a little bit of success with it, it gives you a spark and the energy to keep going, you know? And the biggest thing about this is the trust that you build. Because once you start to use your positive attributes, these seven factors of awakening, mindfulness and investigation, and you start to have trust in it. And then when you have trust in it, you have trust in yourself. You start building trust in yourself. And then you start to enjoy life more. You start to enjoy your practice more. And then in the morning, when you say the morning gatha, waking up this morning, I smile, 24 hours are before me. I vow to live fully present every moment. You're not looking at the next 24 hours with dread. You're looking at them with a smile because I'm going to work my practice today. You know, I'm going to work my practice today. I'm going to see what I can do. I didn't do so well with that one. Okay, this one I did a little bit better with. So it comes down to making a choice to either stick to to old habit energy and patterns, which lead us to distress, or to take the chance on activating the treasures within, which lead us to freedom. So which will we feed? Where will we put our attention? Will we be wise? Or unwise. You know, Buddhism asks you to make radical changes. You know, one week Sasha asked, why is it so difficult? Because it's making a radical change. It's saying, no, I'm not going to do what I always do and do something different. It's scary and you take a risk. But radical change means change at the root from the heart. You know, it involves you. You can't do this practice and stand on the sidelines or read some books and learn about some ideas of Buddhism. It involves you. So how do we get the courage and strength to let go? Now, I'm going to ask you three questions to think about. And I'm going to give you a little chance to think about them. You're not going to share your answers, okay? Well, one answer, but that's easy. But I want you to think about this. I want you to recall a time when you felt contented. Recall a time when you felt contented. Were any of the veiling factors present? When you were contented, was there craving, ill will, dullness, restlessness, worry, doubt? When you were content, were any of the hindrances present? Number two, what do you value deeply? What do you aspire to? So think about that for a minute. What do you value deeply? What do you aspire to? Everybody have something in their minds? Everybody have something in their minds? Yes? No? Okay. Number three, the Buddha said, whatever we frequently think about and dwell on, to this does our mind incline. I'm going to read that again. The Buddha said, whatever we frequently think about and dwell on, to this does our mind incline. What does your mind frequently dwell on? And be honest to yourself. What does your mind frequently dwell on? Be really honest with yourself. Okay, so now I'm going to ask you. Number one, when you were happy, when you were contented, were any of the hindrances present when you were contented? Yes or no? No. When you're contented, when you're joyful, the hindrances are not there. That is so important because we think they're fixed. We think they're fixed and they're part of us and we're never going to let them go. When we're happy, our mind is unencumbered. Buddha said we need a happy mind to concentrate. You need a happy mind to investigate yourself too, so that you can have compassion with yourself and so that you can see yourself clearly and don't constantly get stuck in your judgment of yourself. Because when you're in the judgment, you can't see clearly. No, you have to make your mind happy. You have to make your mind contented so that you could see it clearly and say, oh, I see what I'm doing. A happy mind sees more clearly. The most important takeaway from that exercise is that you know now that your stuff isn't fixed. The stuff that you don't like about yourself isn't fixed. And you can. You can, just by summoning up happiness, you can let go of your anger. You can let go of your jealousy. Just by summoning up the word happy, content, joyful. And of course, you have to want to make a shift. So you see, it's already in you that you can do this practice. You can look at yourself, you can study yourself. You can face your own fears because you have more than the fear within you. You have happiness and joy in you already and love and compassion already. You give it to other people. Why not give it to yourself? So number two, what do you value deeply? What do you aspire to? And number three, what does your mind frequently dwell on? How many people had a discrepancy between what we deeply value and what we frequently think? I'm raising my hand. I had a big discrepancy from my values and what I actually do and think. How about you at home? I don't see any hands raised. Everybody's good? Yeah. We're hindered by what we think and how we think. We have values, but what is it that we have? How do we get to actually live those values out? Making a choice. It comes down to making a choice. So if we can close that gap, you know, it's not like we're going to, you know, revolutionize ourselves overnight, but if we close the gap, then we have a chance at freeing ourselves. So the way I look at it is, we're always practicing something. Every moment, we're practicing something. So I'm going to leave you with these two questions. Does what I practice, this is a question for you to take home. Does what I practice lead me to distress or away from stress? Do it in a moment. In this moment is what I'm thinking. In this moment is what I'm feeling. In this moment is how I'm interacting. In this moment, is it leading me to distress or away from distress? And you could ask yourself, does what I practice lead me to freedom or away from freedom? Is this what I'm doing right now going to lead me to freedom? You know, if my wife says something to me and she hurts my feelings, and I say something back at her, am I going to go to freedom or am I going to go away from freedom? Right? In the moments. These are questions for the moments in your life, in your lives. So we don't have time for questions, but I'm glad about that because I don't really want any questions now. I want you to focus on yourselves and ask yourselves these questions. They're very important questions. Sometimes I think I should have been a Baptist instead of a Buddhist. You know, I feel like I'm, you know. But anyway, so I'll end with that. Thank you.